debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from my home office in Portland. And it's time for Congressman Mark Pocan here on the Tom Hartman Program, where he takes your calls for the full hour. He is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, the big cheese progressive in Washington, D.C., and appropriately is from Wisconsin's 2nd District. Pocan, P-O-C-A-N dot house.gov is his website. You can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. And Congressman, welcome back. I'm wondering what's on your punch list or hit parade or whatever the metaphor is today.
Well, it seems like post-Labor Day, you know, the election is in full focus. And I think that's certainly true from my perspective. While we're back in Washington this month through early October, taking up some legislation, you know, we have to, our fiscal year ends September 30th. We'll have some kind of a continuing resolution. How long, we don't know yet. We still are trying to get a COVID bill. There's a number of other things we have to get done as a Congress. But, you know, I think most eyes are really watching the campaign. It seems to be absolutely full swing. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are getting around the country, as are Mike Pence and Donald Trump. So we're in that final stretch.
Do you think that Bill Barr jumping in and basically using the power of the federal government to help Donald Trump in this rape defamation lawsuit with regard to E. Jean Carroll is going to, I mean, obviously, what apparently the short term effect of this is it, she still has the dress that she was wearing when he raped her. And it's apparently still has stains from his semen on it. And, you know, much like Monica Lewinsky, although it's not getting anywhere near the kind of press that Monica Lewinsky's dress did. But in any case, right. You know, she's trying to get a DNA test from him to compare it with the stuff on the dress to prove her case. And it looks like by Bill Barr inserting himself in this case, because a court ruled a couple of weeks ago that it had to be done immediately, it's now going to be postponed until after the election, you know, which is kind of a goodie for Trump. I mean, is this just another example of how he has corrupted our federal government or what? And what do you think the consequence of this will be?
Well, absolutely. I think everyone already knows Bill Barr is Donald Trump's personal attorney. He's not the Attorney General of the United States. So I don't think it moves a lot. I think everyone knows Donald Trump has had multiple affairs. We've heard it from multiple people. And whether there's more that's out there, I think, you know, people's imagination will take it where they want to. Certainly Michael Cohen's book took the imagination to a few new spots when it comes to Donald Trump. But I think, you know, people are most focused on what's affecting their families right now, which is COVID, the economy around COVID, racial tensions, and, you know, supporting of vigilantes and militia. You know, when I look at polling and I see that Joe Biden is doing better than law and order as an issue than Donald Trump, who's trying to make it an issue, you know, I think people have kind of figured out that they would love to go back to normal again. And the only way you go back to normal is you have to switch presidents. So I don't know if any of these things right now are going to pop up and be an issue. You know, I think the military issue certainly was when he called people suckers and losers because there was a lot of collaboration, and it certainly touched part of some people that had supported Donald Trump. But I think at this point, people are really focused on, you know, they just want to live a normal life and, you know, be able to pay their mortgage and feed their families and maybe plan that family vacation, which for many people, none of those are especially easy these days.
Yeah. And sadly, the media is not pointing out how countries that actually have the virus under control are back to normal. I mean, restaurants are open, businesses are open, they're even having soccer games, and it's amazing. So let's pick up some phone calls here.
States, Tom, like, look at New York. New York has a 1% rate on tests. And in Wisconsin, we just hit double digits because we have students going back, and we've got some other issues, I think, that we still can't get reagents for testing and stuff. So our testing numbers have gone down. I mean, all of this is still an extension of Donald Trump. But when you look at some states like New York, where they have a Democratic governor who's done a number of things right, the rate's coming back at 1% positive. But in a lot of other places in the country, it's really negative. So I think some of those areas that the president counted on are doing the worst, and that's going to affect him as well.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. Okay, let's pick up some phone calls here. Winston in Independence, Missouri. You are on the air with Congressman Pogan.
Hi, Congressman. I wondered if you're aware of the Jobs for All Act that Congresswoman Frederica Wilson introduced back in February of 19. It seems like if it were amended to put all the funding necessary in instead of waiting for a tax, that it could really address a lot of problems related to the pandemic and the economic consequences right now.
Well, there's a number of proposals that I think would work. I think Pramila Jayapal has had one that, I'm going to say the wrong name, it's not the paycheck guarantee, but it's something like that, and I should know the exact name, but that would copy really what they do in Canada, England, Germany, Denmark, where people were able to stay in a job rather than go on unemployment, but the government would pay a very, very hefty portion of the wage. You know, there's a lot of things out there. I think an infrastructure package like we passed in the House this year, the Senate has not done anything would matter. So I don't think we're at a loss for ideas. I think we're at a loss for will, and we can't get that done with Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell in the Senate. So we're just hoping that, you know, should the election go the way that I think many of us are hoping, that we've got some real opportunities starting in January of 2021 to put some things in place that'll get us out of the economic condition that's been caused by COVID, but also take us in a better direction. I mean, it's ridiculous we haven't raised minimum wage for a decade in this country. That has to be a priority. And go down the list of things. So I think, you know, the Jobs for All package that she has is an answer, but there's a lot of answers out there that we could also be doing. We just need to be able to do it politically, and we're stopped right now by Donald Trump.
Michael in Greenville, South Carolina. We have about a minute and a half to the break. Michael.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'll get straight to it. I'm a retired Army Staff Sergeant, Desert Storm veteran. I have a letter from Humana Military TRICARE East Enrollment. They're going to start charging me $25 per month for my military benefits, my medical benefits. What's up with this?
Yeah, Michael, I couldn't tell you offhand. I'm dealing with COVID and the end of the year budget serving on appropriations, but I would say reach out to your member of Congress or the Senate and ask. This might be something they've implemented as a cost-saving measure. We've certainly said there's plenty of excess that we could be trimming from the Department of Defense that goes to contractors. But what we shouldn't be touching is the pay or health care that goes to military personnel. And that's what Bernie Sanders and I and Barbara Lee said in the amendment that we introduced this year to cut spending by 10%. So, you know, that's something I don't think we should be touching in a way that, you know, we made a commitment to the people who served. Thank you for your service, Michael. But for the specifics, I just couldn't tell you offhand. You may want to reach out to your member of Congress.
He got the letter from Humana. Could this be part of the privatization of the VA that Trump is bragging about?
It could be. And, you know, I know that there have been a number of issues. Mark Tucano is the chair of that committee, and he's been really great and expert on this. But I just don't have the answer offhand. It doesn't come through my community jurisdiction. So.
Oh, okay. Congressman Mark Pocan with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Representative Pocan is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He represents the 2nd District of Wisconsin. Pocan.house.gov is his website. We have a special video up over at TomHartman.com, and it's about how a letter that the IRS sent out to 3.9 million Americans saved 700 lives. And you're like, wait a minute, the IRS saved 700 lives? How did that happen? Well, it had to do with Obamacare, and it's a fascinating story. And it turns out that this analysis of this IRS mailing was actually the first time that the federal government has done a study that actually proved that people having access to health care produces fewer deaths. For every 1,648 people who got the letter, there was one fewer premature death. I'll explain the whole thing in the video. As I said, it's available over at TomHartman.com, and it is really worth checking out for a national health care system. John in Seattle, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Thanks, Tom. And Congressman Pocan, thanks for your service, not only to your country, but to humanity in general. But I did want to ask you if you had sort of a post-election analysis of the Democratic senatorial primary, where it looks like Ed Markey managed to put together a coalition of older Democratic voters as well as millennials because of his support for the Green New Deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, if there's a lesson to be learned, I think the best lesson to be learned is that support among especially younger people for addressing climate change, specifically the Green New Deal, is huge. And to watch that much support come to someone who, you know, quite honestly, has been in office already for 44 years and wasn't exactly known as the AOC of the Senate, certainly built a lot of that support based on the Green New Deal. So I think a real strong lesson learned is that there is a strong yearning for addressing climate change, especially among younger voters. And I think it's something we're going to have to fight for should the Vice President, Joe Biden, win and we pick up the Senate. Then, you know, we've got to do something. We can't just continue to talk about climate change. We have to do some action. And I think that's where the real work is going to be needed by those younger voters. They can't just come out once or twice a year and vote. We're going to need them to be real strong activists pushing their elected officials to get it done.
Terry in Eugene, Oregon, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my phone call. Congressman, I was curious, do you see Biden eventually, when he wins, potentially taking the Trump cartel family down as far as, court-wise and stuff like that?
Yeah, Terry, I couldn't tell you because I haven't talked to the vice president specifically about it. However, I am worried that, you know, so often people kind of say, well, they served and that's it. But in this case, this person has taken the presidency to the lowest possible level I think any of us ever could have even imagined it could be taken. And if you let someone get away with that, you've set the standard for any future president, Democrat or Republican or other, to really profit off of their office, break the law, and not give a real trust to the American people. So I would hope that we would still have some of the necessary hearings and find out if there were crimes. And certainly some states are doing that. But I couldn't tell you specifically what Joe Biden would do because I have not talked to him or seen him address the issue, at least in any way.
Congressman, we just have 40 seconds here. I'm curious, when Bill Clinton became president, it was, I mean, during that 2 month period after the election of 1992, in November of 1992 and January of 1993, when Clinton was sworn in, actually it was on Christmas Eve, George Herbert Walker Bush, at the advice of Bill Barr, pardoned all the people that the special prosecutor Lawrence Walsh had indicted and five convictions. And thus stopped the whole Iran-Contra investigation. And Clinton said, you know, we're not going to prosecute or look into a former president. And Obama kind of said the same thing about George W. Bush and his war crimes. Do you think that there will be ever... Actually, let me ask you about this on the other side of the break. This is a real question.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Did you know that Ronald Reagan committed treason to become president in 1980 and George Herbert Walker Bush was in on it and he avoided being prosecuted for this in 1992 with a little help from Bill Barr? It's on page 116 of my book, The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We during the break, we were talking and I was asking Congressman Pocan, I don't recall any Democratic presidents being accused of serious crimes while in office. But certainly with Iran-Contra, Reagan and Bush were accused of these crimes. And Bill Barr advised Bush to pardon Caspar Weinberger and others in December of 1992. He did, and that ended that investigation. And then and Clinton came in and said, you know, we're not going to look back. We're not going to prosecute an ex-president. That's kind of what, you know, third world countries do, tin pot dictators. And Barack Obama took the same position with regard to Bush and Cheney's war crimes. What kind of damage might be done to our republic, or how might it be good for our republic to actually have the federal government hold Donald Trump accountable for crimes he committed while in office?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, it's really important because it's no president has taken the bar so low as this president in abusing his office, whether it be the Emoluments Clause or his taxes or go down the list of things that he's done. And if there are things that are illegal and we don't do something about it, you've set a standard for a future, you know, President Kanye West to take things even farther if that's the standard that we've allowed to happen. So I would hope, my only fear is that, you know, Joe Biden is someone who's been in Washington for a long time. And you know, will he see it the same way, even though he served through these other presidents that didn't, that decided not to do any prosecution? I just don't have an answer to that, but I would certainly hope that we would continue to pursue things.
Yeah, I'm frankly more concerned about a President Tom Cotton, but I get your point.
I hear you.
Carmen in Waldorf, Maryland, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
I'm calling because there was a memo that came out this weekend from the White House that indicates that federal agencies need to cease and desist diversity training. I am a career federal employee. I've been in the federal government for over 25 years, and I happen to be in the diversity and inclusion field. I'm actually a chief diversity officer. And the memo really mischaracterizes the work that we do. Our efforts are of training are not to malign one race or another. It really is to educate federal workforces so that the programs and services that agencies provide do not perpetuate systemic racism. And so I'm just wondering what it is that you and other representatives are going to do about this and how it's going to be addressed.
Yeah, well, again, this is, you know, Donald Trump in the final weeks before the election proving to the racist part of his base that he is indeed wink, wink with them without saying it overtly, although I think many of us see this as an overt attack nonetheless. You know, obviously, we think this is a priority or it wouldn't have been in place to begin with. We will continue to do this when we have a different president. But this is Donald Trump, again, just making those final signals to people that, look, yeah, your family might be getting potentially sick from COVID. And yeah, you might be out of work because I didn't handle all this right. But don't forget, I'm with you on this issue. And I think, you know, again, for all the wrong reasons, for all the worst reasons, Donald Trump has done it.
Charles in Jacksonville, Florida, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a quick question. Can the congressman explain to me how is it legal that the attorney general and the president is using the people's money to defend the president in a civil matter?
Yeah, Charles, I'm with you. I mean, you know, we've watched him do some other things that we thought were questionable, where he intervened, including during the Mueller report and other things. But we've watched, you know, Attorney General Barr prove that he considers himself the president's personal attorney in his conduct. In this question already, I think I've seen some committees say that they're going to be taking a look at this and doing a deeper dive. But I don't have a direct answer for you because, again, this is him, again, not even in a gray zone, I think, of the law, trying to, you know, intercede and benefit Donald Trump as opposed to the American people. They will argue that an unjust attack against the president will probably divert him from his official duties. But I think we all know a little differently. So, you know, stay tuned to the committees that are doing work on this. But, you know, this is just another abuse by Donald Trump, which is why I think we want to make sure that we clean up these abuses when he's out of office, because we don't want a future president to do them.
Congressman, we have about 40 seconds to the break. Is there any stomach in the House of Representatives for taking on the possibility of impeaching Bill Barr?
Yeah, there could be. I just don't think, you know, we're in for 3 weeks now. Then we are off most of October until the election. And then we're back. But, you know, part of my fear, Tom, is, we know when the fall weather comes and people are inside again, you're likely going to see an uptick, I think, on COVID cases. And we already have an uptick because we didn't handle anything right because of Donald Trump. And in my state, I just saw a news thing come across, and I don't want to scare people because I haven't read it. I'm reading a headline. But I'm watching some traffic that says public officials in Madison, downtown residence workers should assume you've been exposed to COVID-19. You know, that's the reality. If it only gets worse, it's going to be difficult, I think, to see how some of the things Congress is going to be able to do like that in the time that'll be left after the election before Donald Trump leaves office.
Yeah, makes sense. Congressman Mark Pocan, the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, taking your calls for the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls for the Congressman in just a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today for the Tom Hartman Book Club is A Woman of No Importance, The Untold Story of the American Spy Who Helped Win World War II by Sonia Purnell. This is from the prologue. France was falling. Burned out cars, once strapped high with treasured possessions, were nosed crazily into ditches. Their beloved cargoes of dolls, clocks, and mirrors lay smashed around them and along mile upon mile of unfriendly road. Their owners, young and old, sprawled across the hot dust and were groaning or already silent. Yet the hordes just kept streaming past them, a never-ending line of hunger and exhaustion, too fearful to stop for days on end. 10 million women, children, and old men were on the move, all fleeing Hitler's ranks, pouring across the border from the east and the north. Entire cities had uprooted themselves in a futile bid to escape the Nazi blitzkrieg that threatened to engulf them. The fevered talk was of German soldiers stripped to the waist in jubilation at the ease of their conquest. The air was thick with smoke and the stench of the dead. The babies had no milk and the aged fell where they stood. The hordes, drawing overladen old farm carts, sagged and snarled in their sweat-drenched agony. The French heat wave of May 1940 was witness to this, the largest refugee exodus of all time. Day after day, a solitary moving vehicle weaved its way through the crowd with a striking young woman at the wheel. Private Virginia Hall often ran low on fuel and medicines, but still pressed on in her French Army ambulance toward the advancing enemy. She persevered even when the German Strukas came screaming down to drop 110-pound bombs onto the convoys all around her, torching the cars and cratering the roads. Even when fighter planes swept over the treetops to machine gun the ditches where women and children were trying to take cover from the carnage. Even though French soldiers were deserting their units, abandoning their weapons and running away, some in their tanks. Even when her left hip was shot with pain from continually pressing down on the clutch with her prosthetic foot. Now, at the age of 34, her mission marked the turning point after years of cruel rejection. For her own sake, as much as for the casualties she was picking up from the battlefields and ferrying to the hospital, she could not fail again. There were many reasons why she was willingly jeopardizing her life far from home in aid of a foreign country when millions of others were giving up. Perhaps foremost among them was that it had been so long since she had felt so thrillingly alive. Disgusted with the cowardice of the deserters, she could not understand why they would not continue the fight. But then she had little to lose. The French still remembered sacrificing a third of their young menfolk to the Great War, and a nation of widows and orphans were in no mood for more bloodshed. Virginia, though, intended to go on the road, wherever the battle took her. She was prepared to take whatever risks, face down any dangers. Total war against the Third Reich might perversely offer her one last hope of personal peace.
Yet even this was as nothing compared with what was to come in a life that drew out into a Homeric tale of adventure, action, and seemingly unfathomable courage. Virginia Hall's service in the France of summer 1940 was merely an apprenticeship for a near-suicide mission against the tyranny of the Nazis and their puppeteers in France. She helped to pioneer a daredevil role in espionage, sabotage, and subversion behind enemy lines in an era where women barely featured in the prism of heroism, when their part in combat was confined to the supportive and the palliative, when they were just expected to look nice and act obedient and let the men do the heavy lifting. When disabled women, or men, were confined to staying at home and leading often narrow, unsatisfying lives. The fact that a young woman who had lost her leg in tragic circumstances broke through the tightest constrictions and overcame prejudice and even hostility to help the Allies win the Second World War is astonishing. That a female guerrilla leader of her stature remains so little known to this day is incredible. Yet that is perhaps how Virginia would have wanted it. She operated in the shadows, and that was where she was happiest, even to her closest allies in France. She seemed to have no home or family or regiment, merely a burning desire to defeat the Nazis. They knew neither her real name nor her nationality, nor how she had arrived in their midst. Constantly changing in looks and demeanor, surfacing without notice across whole swaths of France, only to disappear again as suddenly, she remained an enigma throughout the war, and in some ways after it, too. Even now, tracing her story has involved 3 solid years of detective work, taking me from the National Archives in London, the resistance files in Lyon, and the parachute drop zones in the Haute Loire, to the judicial dossiers of Paris and even the white marble corridors of CIA headquarters at Langley. My search led me through 9 levels of security clearance into the heart of today's world of American espionage. I have discussed the pressures of operating in enemy territory with a former member of Britain's special services and ex-intelligence officers from both sides of the Atlantic. I've tracked down files that were missing and discovered that others remain mysteriously lost or unaccounted for. I have spent days drawing diagrams matching dozens of code names with scores of her missions, months hunting for remaining extracts of these strange disappeared papers, years digging out forgotten documents and memoirs. The book A Woman of No Importance by Sonia Pernell.
Ellen in Cortland Manor, New York. You are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman. I have a question. What's keeping Senate lawmakers from passing a COVID-19 relief deal? And what concrete steps can we, the people, take?
Yeah, Ellen, great question. First of all, Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans have just not taken up hundreds of bills that we've sent from the House. The only thing they focused on is making sure that they affirm conservative judges that Donald Trump has put forward. But they haven't done almost anything legislatively. I mean, our fiscal year ends September 30th, they haven't done anything in the appropriation process. You know, in the House, we passed 10 of the 12 bills back in summer, and we're still waiting for the Senate to do anything. In the case of COVID, we passed our bill in May, the HEROES Act. They did nothing for several months. Then they started to negotiate. They can't even pass a bill because they can't even get their own members to vote for a bill, because, again, there's such a Kool-Aid drinking by the Republican Party these days, because it's a cult of Donald Trump, not a conservative political party, that they have to wait for direction to do almost anything. So the best thing I think people can do is just you call your elected officials and you tell what you expect of them. And that's whether they're Democrats or Republicans. But in this case, clearly it's the Republicans who are holding up any action in the Senate. And we have to tell them we need relief now for COVID, and we need substantive relief for people who are unemployed and for small business owners. And we need to protect those frontline workers. Those are all key components of what we had in the HEROES Act. And that's what we need the Senate to come to the table and get done.
Bill in St. Helens, Oregon, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yeah, hi, Tom, Congressman Pocan. So, the Congressman, the Earth is unquestionably at DEFCON 1 on climate change, and yet I'm hearing about maybe people will call in and write and pressure their congresspersons to take action on this. I guess just two quick questions for you. Number one, what specifically are you doing or have you done to address climate change? And number two, and more importantly, why is no one asking Donald Trump this question? This should be the top question that should be asked of both parties right now, and I'm hearing it getting very short shrift. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, to the second one first, I think there are some pushes going on right now to have the debates bring this up and make it a subject. Because you're right, Donald Trump's not going to answer it. Remember, he thought windmills were causing problems and all this other craziness years ago when he talked about it. But that should be a major focus of any future debate. As to what Congress is doing, I mean, the problem is we can't do much with the Senate and the president that we have. I'm one of the first people, I think, that signed on to the Green New Deal. I think it's imperative we do that. It's good for jobs here in America as opposed to overseas. Those are good family-supporting wage jobs, unionized jobs that we can do. That's very important to me. So, you know, I think but that's a resolution, right? We have to actually enact legislation and, more importantly, put money where we have to in order to really prove that it's a real issue. And I serve on the Appropriations Committee, and I'm looking forward to the day that we can do that with a cooperative Senate and a president. But right now, we are stymied by, like every other bill that I could go through that we used to talk about all the time, literally hundreds of bills we've sent to the Senate that have not been taken up by Mitch McConnell. So I'm a supporter of the Green New Deal. I think there's many different initiatives we should be doing and putting into legislation. The Progressive Caucus has taken formal stances on this, but we don't have a willing partner in the Senate or the White House.
Andy in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hey, Congressman. Hey, I got a quick question. Where do we stand on this fake tax break for payroll tax break? And another quick question on that is that not bribing, you know, for votes if he's going to say he's going to forgive my tax cut if he gets elected? How is that not a bribe?
Yeah, well, it's not a bribe. It's another lie. And I think we're used to Donald Trump lies. I mean, that was one of the more feckless executive orders he did. He said he's going to withhold payroll tax till the end of the year. Then you're going to have to pay it back. So there's nothing withheld. All he's doing is telling he'll put you a little more money in your pocket if they can even figure out how to implement it, which I'm not sure has yet been figured out. And you're still going to owe it. So it doesn't make any sense. It's like all the other executive orders he did, too, weren't exactly in place or legal. The money for unemployment is going to last 3 to 5 weeks. That's not a serious effort to help people who are unemployed. His effort on student loans is the only real executive order that I think can automatically proceed. But in the case of the payroll tax, it's such an artificial one. I think people just have quit talking about it because it's so not real.
Michael in Bronx, New York, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Congressman. I know that a question was asked earlier about pursuing criminal charges against Trump, but why not also pursue criminal charges or investigation for some, if not a lot, of these police union heads who have been acting on behalf of Trump, misusing the police, encouraging police violence, and brutality, where we have lost as many lives as the COVID-19. I take into account most notably two of them here in New York City, one Patrick Lynch and one Ed Mullins, who both met with Trump at his New Jersey golf resort and giving him what I would say their personal endorsement with the bold-faced lie, saying all of New York City police stand behind you, and where we have some police officers, retired and active, that said not all cops support Trump. Can you investigate that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the difficulty might be, Michael, is that you'd have to show a direct order of some way from whoever from the police union telling an officer to do something to really make, I think, the connection that you would need to make in order to have criminal
charges. So I think, you know, there could be some efforts at the local levels where that could happen. But, you know, when I look at what happened in Kenosha, for example, I can't say that there was someone from the police union who, you know, ordered that officer to shoot seven times in the back. Is usually it's a very quick decision where it's made, but it's more a test of what's wrong with the current policing we have in this country, that someone would think that that was acceptable response to what happened. So I understand what you're saying. I think it might be harder in a court of law to prove what you want to prove.
Ray in Napa, California, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman Pocan. Hey, you know, it seems like it looks like the DNC and the Biden campaign are kind of pandering to the Republicans in the swing state. That's kind of the 2016 strategy that failed. Do you think maybe they should go more for the young progressives? Because my young progressive friends are just not jumping onto the Biden wagon. Thank you.
Yeah, Ray, I'll tell you, let me offer it from this perspective. I live in one of those swing states, and I don't see that happening. You know, Joe Biden going to Kenosha, meeting with the family of Jacob Blake, wasn't swinging to the middle. Kamala Harris was here on Labor Day, meeting at the IBEW, taking a tour and then having a panel. That wasn't swinging to the middle. So I don't see them doing it in places like Wisconsin. You know, they're up on every media market. I don't see the ads necessarily trying to appeal to Republicans. I know some of the speakers certainly at the convention were, but I mean, that's weeks ago. I'm looking at the current activities of what the campaign's doing in my state, and I don't necessarily see that happening. I also don't necessarily see progressives not interested, because I see a very different scenario in Wisconsin than we did see 4 years ago when Hillary Clinton was running. So I can only address it from that perspective, but I'm not seeing what your fears are, Ray. So hopefully that helps.
Lee in San Bernardino, California. We're on the air. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Congressman Pocan, I got a quick question for you. Where did they come up with their calculations for unemployment? I was making, I was at a part-time job, Pizza Hut, and I made $89 on unemployment. I was supposed, if I didn't make 100, you don't qualify. So I'm thinking, why didn't the low-wage workers get the money first before the high-wage workers? And where did they get their calculations, if you know?
Yeah, Lee, generally that's going to be done state by state. So there's different, like Florida has really bad a law for workers. Wisconsin, I think the max you can get is $370 a week, depending on how much you're making. That certainly doesn't benefit higher wage workers, because you're going to be maxed out at that $370. So it really is done state by state. The $600 was, I think, you know, a figure that, you know, would have brought people to about the median family income that they could be then making sure they could provide for their family at that level. But your issue is probably with the state of California.
You can find his website at pocan.house.gov, and you can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be back with your calls for Congressman Pocan in just a moment. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. On the Science Revolution this week, the impact of the pandemic on Trump's refusal to acknowledge science or join the World Health Organization's backed Vaccine Cooperation Pact. It's harming Americans. as Trump brings the con into the pandemic. Dr. Bandy Lee is here on the science of hate mongering. Is Donald Trump's hate contagious? Ellie Zupnik drops by about another broken promise on drug pricing from Donald Trump as the August 24th deadline comes and goes. Plus, Kevin Patel is here on the pollution from wildfires. Tune into the Science Revolution wherever fine podcasts are found. Louise in Seattle, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good morning. I know that just listening to the calls that nuclear weapons are not on most Americans' minds these days. In today's Seattle Times, there is an article talking about Northrop Grumman being awarded 13-something billion for replacement of land-based missiles. I know that that's peanuts in today's money, but eventually that goes to $85 billion. So I'm wondering what your position is, Representative Pocan, about dealing with nuclear weapons.
Yeah, Louise, thanks for bringing that issue up, and you're right. I think in general, I have not seen the level of scrutiny of the defense budget that you used to see. In fact, in the last 4 years, we know it's increased 20% defense spending at a time of relative peace, and that makes no sense. Most of that money going to private contractors. So that's why Bernie Sanders and Barbara Lee and I had that amendment to try to cut 10%. We thought a modest cut. We got a decent amount of support, and I think it's something we're trying to build on over the next year, because we now are at a point where because of the sequester, anything that was cut from defense would be cut from non-defense in discretionary spending. That's done as of this year. So next year, we have a real opportunity, specifically on nuclear weapons. I don't think we need to have the amount of nuclear weapons that we currently have. There's no rational reason, and I think a lot of that money is part of where you could find some areas to cut. What we don't want to do is cut for the personnel and their health care. That's not something that we've recommended, but we have thought money going to private contractors, nuclear weapons, the Space Force, the overseas contingent account that's been a slush fund. Those are all prime targets for these cuts.
Mike in Columbus, Ohio, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hey, Congressman, thanks for coming on. Always appreciate it. My concerns are I wish my congressman would come on, but he will. The MORE Act is coming down this month, and I guess I'm interested in, from your perspective, the political calculus. The MORE Act is this piece of legislation you guys are supposed to vote on to decriminalize marijuana, which, you know, take it off Schedule One, and everybody's agreed with that. But at this time, it seems like everybody feels congressional dysfunction. We can't get COVID-19 passed, and now we're going to start talking about decriminalizing pot in the middle of this. Do they think this is going to bring more people on our side to the polls? Why are they? And they know it's not going to make it through the Senate. So I guess I'm interested in what your thoughts are on that.
Sure, Mike. Yeah, I think this was related to some of the policing issues too. The fact that so many people are incarcerated or arrested for something that's legal in many other states, and it doesn't quite make sense. So that's why the MORE Act was anticipated coming up this month. However, I just in the last 48 hours have heard it may not be coming up now. So if people care about the MORE Act, they should reach out to their members of Congress and ask where they stand on the issue and try to make sure it's scheduled. But I have heard it may not be coming up now after they said it might in the few weeks that we have before the election.
Is this the sort of, we have 35, 40 seconds. Is this the sort of thing that activists should really be trying to get as ballot initiatives?
I mean, that's an alternative way. I mean, Congress should be able to do their work, but obviously Mitch McConnell and the president have been a problem for the last several years, so we know that's an issue. But people, you know, we should be able to vote on this in Congress the next few weeks, and the fact that it might be pulled. If people care about this issue, they need to reach out to their member of Congress.
Cool. Thank you. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is The Deep History of Ourselves, The 4 Billion Year History of How We Got Conscious Brains by Joseph Ledoux. This is from the prologue, Why on Earth? The Deep History of Ourselves explores the place of human beings in the nearly 4 billion year long history of life. When I mentioned to a friend that I was writing such a book, she asked, "Why on earth are you taking on such a project?" She knew that I'd spent most of my scientific career studying circuits in the rat's brain that underlie behavioral reactions to danger, with an eye to how that information could help us understand at least some aspects of human emotions, especially fear and anxiety. Part of the answer to my friend's question is that if we really want to understand human nature, we have to understand its evolutionary history. Our behavior is part of our biology, and as the evolutionary biologist Theodosius Dobzhansky once said, nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution. That behavior and evolution are interrelated is hardly a novel idea. Darwin emphasized it, as did pioneering ethnologists such as Nico Tinbergen and Conrad Lorenz. The behaviorists who dominated psychology in the first half of the 20th century paid little attention to evolution, but most contemporary psychologists and neuroscientists accept it as a key factor. Most efforts to understand the evolution of behavior, especially in neuroscience, typically focus on the relationship between closely related groups, such as humans and other mammals. There are obvious reasons to do so. For example, since the brain controls behavior, studies of how brains evolved in such groups help us understand the evolution of their respective behavioral repertoire, and also ours. But there's also good reason to look deeper. For example, research comparing mammals, often rodents, and invertebrates, such as fly and worms, are showing results that show the connection between these, and also are helping reveal how memory works in us. In this book, I've opted to dive even deeper, in fact, very deep, all the way back to the beginning of life, and even to the so-called prebiotic chemical conditions of the Earth, which made biology, and hence life, possible. I've always been casually interested in the evolution of brain and behavior, but never pursued the topic with such vigor. Then in 2009, I spent some time in Cambridge on sabbatical and became friendly with Seth Grant, a neurobiologist who I first met while he was a postdoc uptown working in Nobel laureate Eric Kandel's lab at Columbia. While there, he began researching the evolution of genes involved in synaptic plasticity to better understand the biological mechanisms of learning and memory, and was continuing this line of work at Cambridge. Seth found parallels in plasticity-related genes between rodents and sea slugs, suggesting that they may each have inherited the ability to learn from a common ancestor that lived hundreds of millions of years ago. But even more interesting, some of the same genes exist in single-cell protozoa. That's relevant, since animals in current-day protozoa share a common ancestor that lived over a billion years ago. Some of the learning-related genes in our nervous system may therefore come to us via such microbial ancestors. If you know anything about protozoa, you may be scratching your head regarding these findings. Most people, if they think about it at all, think of behavior, and especially learned behavior, as the product of a nervous system. But protozoa, being single-celled organisms, don't have nervous systems, since that requires special cells, neurons, and they only possess one all-purpose cell. Yet they have a robust behavioral life. They swim away from harmful chemicals and toward useful ones, and they even use past experience to guide their present responses, suggesting that they have the ability to both learn and remember. The logical conclusion is that behavior, learning, and memory don't actually require a nervous system. This was eye-opening to me, so I did a little research to see what was known about the behavioral capacities of single-cell organisms. I found accounts not only of their swimming away from danger and toward nutrients, but also of moving toward or away from chemicals or sunlight to balance fluids or regulate temperature inside the cell relative to its environment. Protozoa even engage in mating behavior, sex, to reproduce their kind. Protozoa are relatively recent single-celled organisms, having appeared about 2 billion years ago, when they evolved from another familiar single-cell creature, bacteria, who are the oldest living organisms, having emerged about 3.5 billion years ago. Bacteria exhibit many of the same kinds of behaviors that protozoa do, but they did so first. They approach and avoid useful and harmful things in their world, and they even learn from experience what is useful and harmful in their world. They don't, however, reproduce sexually. They simply divide in half. Sex is the behavioral claim to fame of eukaryotes, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, which evolve from bacteria and which include protozoa and animals. When animals engage in defensive energy management, fluid balance, and reproductive behaviors by freezing, fleeing, eating, drinking, and mating, scientists and laypeople often describe these activities as an expression of underlying psychological states, consciously felt experiences such as fear, hunger, thirst, and sexual pleasure. In doing so, we effectively project our own experiences onto these organisms. Given how ancient these behaviors are and how they arose long before nervous systems, We should probably be more judicious in making such attributions based on our mental states. And then he continues, the deep history of our cells, the 4 billion year story of how we got conscious brains by Joseph Ledoux.
Welcome back. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour. He's the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Roger in Indianapolis, Indiana. You are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, with the promotion of early voting, absentee voting, which I think is good. My question is, what happens if the vote goes in early and because of the COVID, the person who cast the vote passes away before the election? Does the vote get canceled? Is that going to cause a problem?
Roger, I honestly don't know that. I think the number of people who will die between now and the election that might happen to is relatively small. I guarantee it's something that people have addressed. I just don't know the answer to it offhand. But, we are encouraging people to vote early. I mean, you know, get your absentee ballot, fill it out, drop it off at your city, village, or town hall right away, or put it in the mail. You know, then it'll have plenty of time to get there. But, you know, we don't know what it's going to be like on the ground by November 3rd. So I think it's imperative. The candidates aren't going to change on the ballot. Vote early. Get your friends and family to vote early. And we're going to then, you know, folks who don't vote early, we'll get them out on Election Day. But I don't have a direct answer to your question, Roger.
Eric in Minneapolis, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Thank you for taking my call. Bob Woodward's new book, Rage, came out with excerpts saying that Donald Trump in February told him that the coronavirus was deadly, airborne, and going to kill a lot of people. And Woodward also released audio with that they've been playing on CNN. Can't we impeach this guy? He's murdering everybody.
Yeah, no, we already saw Mitch McConnell's not going to suddenly change. So, really people need to kind of move on from impeachment and move on to the election that's coming up and take that very righteous rage and do it to get people out to vote. You know, obviously he knew this. We all knew this in Congress, right? I mean, I had Dr. Fauci several times in front of my Committee on Appropriations, and he said back in February, if we just closed down the country for 2 weeks, 2 weeks at that time, we would have stopped the spread of the virus. And Donald Trump did nothing during all of this time. And then we still incompetently did the close downs. We still don't have a national plan. We still can't get reagents to run tests. We still can't get PPE. So, yeah, absolutely. Donald Trump has completely ineptly and negligently handled the COVID crisis. But I think we already all know that. I think this is a good essential prover, again, that he knew what was happening. And I'm sure that'll keep it in the news a little bit. But, impeachment's not a fast process. It's not going to happen to Mitch McConnell. So let's focus on the one thing that we can all work towards together, and that is defeating him on November 3rd.
Samuel in Santa Ana, California, listening on KPFK. You're on with Congressman Pocan.
Congressman Pocan, Bloomberg said that he was going to spend $500 million or more going up against Biden. Where is all the money? Why aren't the other congressmen speaking about it?
Yeah, Samuel, I can't speak for Mike Bloomberg, so I don't know. But I know that I don't think they're hurting for resources. I mean, people have been very generous around the country, and I haven't heard that they're concerned. And the main thing that I've watched is Wisconsin. You know, 4 years ago, we had very little activity from the presidential campaign because I think they thought they had it in the bag, and then we lost it by just under 23,000. That's not the case. Every media market, Joe Biden is up in Wisconsin. He's visiting tomorrow. There have been plenty of virtual conversations with people from Wisconsin. There's a lot of organizers on the ground. So I just don't know what Mike Bloomberg is up to, but I also don't see a problem in what I'm witnessing, at least in Wisconsin, from the campaign.
Are you optimistic that Joe Biden's going to win?
I am. I think if we all focus on voting early, get those absentee ballots in right away, make sure everyone you know gets the absentee ballot, gets it in right away, and then we know it's going to be counted, and we don't dilly-dally and wait till the Friday before and then have to have concerns, I feel that we will win. But that's the important part, because we have to get those ballots and vote early and encourage others to do so.
From your lips to God's ears, as the old saying goes back. Hi, Tom Harbin here. My new book is out, The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. American monopolies dominate, control, and consume most of the energy of our entire economic system. They function the same as cancer does in a body. And like cancer, they weaken our systems while threatening to crash the entire body economic. American monopolies have also seized massive political power and use it to maintain their obscene profits and CEO salaries while crushing small competitors. In the foreword by Ralph Nader, he says, quote, "This is the most important dynamic book on the cancers of monopoly by giant corporations written in our generation," end quote. It's the fourth in my Hidden History series. Available where all fine books are sold. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Democracy starts with you. Tag, you're it. Nick in Chicago, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to get the congressman's reaction to Eric Swalwell's statement last month about creating a presidential crimes commission once Donald Trump is out of office, since you gentlemen were talking about trying Trump on everything he's done.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I don't think that's like the silver bullet, right? I think, you know, you need an attorney general who decides that they represent the United States of America and not an individual as president to decide to pursue some of this. So I think it really is going to come to Joe Biden and whether or not he's willing to do some of this. And I think we all have to make that case why we think it's important for the integrity of the office of the president that it gets done.
Al in Franklin Park, Illinois, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. My basic question that I have is, if Trump gets reelected, he wants to eliminate Social Security. And when that happens, if that happens, we've all paid into a trust fund, and it seems like all I hear is a lot of folks wouldn't have benefits. But everyone else, you know, realize you've worked your whole life into this thing, you'd lose it. What really would happen in a situation like that?
Yeah, Al, no, you're right. In fact, there is another article today that caught my attention when the president's press secretary said that a goal of the second term of Donald Trump will be addressing the deficit and debt. And I can tell you exactly what it's going to be. It's not going to be raising taxes on the wealthiest or on corporations that send jobs overseas. It's going to be on things like reducing things like Social Security and Medicare. And Social Security, we all pay into our entire lives. And that's expected to help us get through. In fact, there's a bill in Congress that I and literally hundreds of Democrats are sponsors of that would expand benefits for Social Security, not reduce them. And yet that's exactly what you'll get proposed from Donald Trump. And he just said it again, essentially by saying he's going to address deficit and debt. That's the only place he can try to do it is through what he would say is entitlements. And that's a very false choice. And one more reason why we need to get people excited in the next 2 months.
Andy in River Falls, Wisconsin. We got a minute to the end of the show. Quick one.
Hi, guys. Hey, I was just wondering why Senate, you know, Congress, why they don't call these guys out as fascists. I mean, call them out for what they are. You know, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. And I mean, you know, if he wins, we're in serious trouble. You know, and everyone, and I don't think people really realize.
Let's get the response, Andy. We're running out of time here.
Yeah, Andy, I think you just got to follow a few of our Twitter feeds. I think I've used the word fascist quite a few times. I know I think Ted Lieu and others have. I mean, there's no question these are fascist actions, and people who do fascist actions are often fascist. So you're right, we need to call it out that way, and many of us have.
Congressman, in the 15 seconds we've got left, what should we be looking for in the coming week?
You know, I think whatever we can do to fight to get a COVID package out, we need it for this country. We need it for people who are unemployed and for small business owners, for our frontline workers. You know, reach out to your members of Congress. We're back in session. Be active on your phone. Make our phones ring.
Okay, you got it. Thank you, Congressman.
Yep, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Always, thank you. Always great having you on.
We'll be back with more of the news and more of my thoughts and yours in this kind of national town hall meeting we have here every day on the Tom Hartman program. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Never was intended to be. It requires you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.